Hello and welcome to Doing Time Behind the Bars of America. You're with Radioactive Radio San Diego and I'm DJ Eleanor of The Ways. DJ Awakened is also in the studio and we'll be taking you through until 6 o'clock this evening. So stay tuned for a very long informative show with lots of great music, political prisoner updates and more. On a regular basis, Doing Time Behind the Bars of America will give regular political prisoners updates, provide listeners with information about upcoming events, discuss occupied territory, colonisation and imperialism. Conferences and protests will be aired and covered live. Women in prison who are grossly underrepresented in the mainstream media will be given a voice. Tonight's show is dedicated to Richard Williams, longtime political prisoner who passed away on the 7th of December 2005. We'll be interviewing Matt Hart from Anarchist Black Cross Federation about this issue later on in the show, who he'll not only talk about Richard's life and achievements, but will also give us an overview of Anarchist Black Cross Federation and provide listeners with the work ABCF is currently doing to free all political prisoners. So stay tuned to Radioactive Radio for this interview and more. We've got a couple of other things coming up as well. We have Jason Robbins, who's from Anti-Racist Action in Philadelphia, and he has been brutalised by the police and has a multitude of really, really horrific charges, which I'd really like to discuss. And perhaps Awakened can help me with this too. Awakened, you haven't said hello yet. How's your tooth?
Hello.
He's got a bit of a toothache tonight. So I'll start off. We wanted actually throughout the show to really talk about material in relation to Richard Williams. There's a couple of statements and articles that I wanted to read. But the first thing that I actually wanted to talk about was about Daniel McGowan, who's an environmental activist, and he was arrested in New York. And I wanted to actually read out a transcript from Democracy Now!, which really does talk about the issues in some detail. So I'll start off by reading the transcript and then I'll point you in the direction of making donations to his defence fund if activists feel like they can. So we'll start off with Amy Goodman says, "We are joined in our New York studio by Daniel McGowan's attorney, Martin Stoller, Executive Director of National Lawyers Guild. We're also joined by McGowan's longtime girlfriend, Jenny Simon, and we welcome you both to Democracy Now!" And Marty Stoller says, Amy Goodman says, "Marty Stoller, let's begin with you. What are these charges? Do these come as a surprise?" Martin Stoller, "Well, they come certainly as a surprise because Daniel McGowan was an upfront activist, an outspoken activist and a peaceful man, not somebody who would ever be involved in any kind of violent activity. And the charges which let him face from a minimum of 30 years to a maximum of life in prison come totally out of the blue. And the charges deal with events that took place almost 5 years ago, and they just beat the statute of limitations by filing this indictment in November. The activities that he's alleged to have participated in took place in January of 2001 and May of 2001. The indictment covers a series of arsons and the use of an incendiary device to set the arsons in progress. Daniel, of course, is totally innocent. He insists that he is innocent. He has no apology for being the activist that he was." And Amy Goodman says, "Jenny, how did you find out he was arrested?" Jenny, "I was at work and I received a call from his co-worker. Basically, she said that three FBI agents had come into their offices and they went to talk to him and then they took him away and he just said, 'Call Jenny.'" And Jenny's his long-time girlfriend. "So they somehow tracked me down. I still don't really know how, but that doesn't matter. And she called me and let me know what happened. So, you know, obviously it was an extreme shock to me and I immediately called his sister because he's very close with his sister. And I left work early to go home. And as I was approaching my building, there were two men outside my building and I just kind of went up to my door as if I was just going to, you know, open it up. And one of them hung up the phone saying, 'I think we got our search warrant.' So I turned around and left because I just didn't want to deal with that. So I went home later that night and our apartment had been searched and a lot of things had been taken and it was pretty much a mess." Amy Goodman, "What was taken?" Jenny, both of our computers were taken. We have, you know, a room that's kind of like our office. And now, you know, some of my own personal things were taken that had nothing to do with him. Photographs, audio tapes. He had a lot of zines and flyers. I'm sure those were all taken. A number of his books, I think, you know, around 20-something of his books were taken. They pretty much just went through the whole place and just took whatever they wanted. Martin Stoll, your reaction when you heard that the government has declared these groups as the primary domestic terrorist threat? Martin Stoller, it's unbelievable. You know, the government claims that the ELF, as in ELF, and the ELF, ALF, are somehow sort of domestic terrorists, and yet what they do is they wind up arresting people who are peaceful activists, and it is another example of how this administration has criminalised dissent, and it is really troubling. Amy Goodman, the bail being set, Martin, the bail being set was no bail. You know, I've been practising as a federal criminal defence lawyer for over 30 years. I have never presented as strong a bail package as I presented for Daniel McGowan. Six members of his family on $1 million personal recondance bond secured by $850,000 in property and stocks and bonds. That should be enough to secure the appearance of somebody. And yet we had a magistrate judge in Brooklyn who said, nope, that's not sufficient. We think that this young man would run away and bankrupt his entire family. His father, his mother, his two sisters, his brother-in-law and Jenny, his companion, were prepared to sign on that bond and put their entire financial futures in jeopardy if Daniel ran away. And yet no bail would be obtained because the government stands up and says, this is somebody who is an eco-terrorist. Amy Goodman, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank you both for being with us. We'll certainly continue to follow this case. So, yeah, it's pretty self-explanatory, isn't it? Daniel McGowan is an environmental and social justice activist unjustly arrested and charged in federal court. Neither Daniel McGowan nor his support group, family and friends of Daniel McGowan are affiliated with any other organisation or group, and any claim to the contrary is speculation and is strongly discouraged. Now, that particular statement that I just read out is a statement that was actually put out by Daniel's family, and questions and concerns can be directed to friends of Daniel McGowan at yahoo.com. I'll just go through that email in detail. Friends of Daniel McGowan at yahoo.com, and McGowan is spelt M-C-G. Oh, okay, there's been a little bit of an admin error here. I'll read that again. Friends of Daniel M-C-G at yahoo.com. So MCG are initials. Friends of MCG at yahoo.com. So any questions and concerns can be directed to that particular email. Again, if people wish to donate to Daniel's Defence Fund, they can also email that address and information will be sent to the person about where they can donate. And we'll now prepare for another song.
This is DJ Awaken. We're going to do another song by on the compilation LP by Earth First, Keep It Wild.
The name of the song is Flaming Arrows. This is for you, Daniel, and in memory of Richard Williams. And just to clarify what you read earlier a little bit, the ALF that she announced stands for Animal Liberation Front, and ELF stands for Earth Liberation Front, which is not an organization. And they publicly announced that they define violence, meaning that life harming life, and they do not perceive that property destruction is harming life unless it's intent to harm life.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, there's no such organization. There's no such, you know, why speculate?
Well, yes, it's not an organization, and it's a tactic that's used as in regards to Earth Liberation Front as a tactic that was intended to use as a last resort. Extreme measures, calls for extreme situations. If it's approaching critical habitat is one thing, but building a piece of property that's already been damaged by the earth and surrounded by a city is a different issue. issue. Earth Liberation Front really focuses on liberating animals that are endangered in regards to being used for scientific experiments and that are situations in that regard.
Welcome to Radioactive Radio San Diego, and we have Josh on the line from Anti-Racist Action in Philadelphia. Welcome to the program, Josh.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Lovely to have you. Now, Josh, I wanted to actually speak to you about Jason Robbins, who's from Anti-Racist Philadelphia. I mentioned earlier on the show that this particular activist has been brutalized by police. Can you just tell listeners a bit about what's happening with Jason? He gave you permission to speak for him, and I'd just like to hear about what's been happening.
Okay, sure. I don't know if your listeners know, Jason was arrested at a homeless station that our
Can you speak up a bit there, Josh? Sorry.
Sure. Is that better?
Yep, that's better.
Jason was arrested at a home demonstration that we were having against this local Christian fundamentalist group. Jason wasn't actually at the demonstration. He was sitting in the car about a block away. And the police responded to a 911 call, and they came. And the first thing they saw was Jason sitting in the van. And they went over to Jason, and they asked him for ID. Jason asked them what he had done, if he had done anything wrong, if he was being detained or arrested. And they said no to him, so he refused to give his identification. After that, they pulled him out of the van, opened the door, pulled him out of the van, threw him down on the ground, and then back up against the van. And in that process, he hurt his knee pretty badly.
So his activism is obviously being undermined, isn't it?
At this point, we feel that that the authorities in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania, and in East Pikeland, the two jurisdictions where this happened and where the case is being tried, are trying to undermine both Jason's activism and the activism of our organization. Since Jason's been released from jail, three other people have received charges in the mail stemming from the same incident. So we feel that this is an intimidation tactic to get us to stop organizing in that area.
So the area that you're talking about is on behalf of queer rights and reproductive freedom.
That's right.
And also other things, you know, like rallying against hate groups and things like that, yeah?
Exactly. This specific campaign is against this group called Repent America, which has been coming out to gay pride events, HIV fundraisers, protesting outside abortion clinics, just generally crashing events that have to do with reproductive freedom or with gay rights on a regular basis.
So basically, just to reiterate for listeners, Jason is facing over 30 years in prison just for the sole crime of being present at a peaceful demonstration against an anti-queer, anti-woman hate group, huh?
And just to repeat, Jason wasn't even at this demonstration.
He wasn't even there.
He was in the car a block away.
So he was in the car?
Right.
What does that mean in practice?
Excuse me?
What does that mean in practice? Why was he arrested if he was just in the car?
Initially, the police officers cited the Patriot Act and told us that not providing ID to a law enforcement officer at any time, anywhere, was a crime and that we could be charged with that. After the fact, though, Jason was given charges that had nothing to do with providing identification. He was given aggravated assault on a police officer, simple assault, reckless endangerment, and a variety of felonies and misdemeanor charges.
Here are the rest of the charges. Disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, that's right, and reckless endangerment, as you said.
Right.
And I think from what I can gather, and it's okay to discuss these charges, the assault charge is a second-degree felony.
Right. Originally, it was a first-degree felony, and at his preliminary hearing, it was reduced to a second-degree felony, which doesn't really make that much of a difference.
Not really.
Not really.
And collectively, the charges carry a maximum jail sentence of over 30 years in prison.
That's right.
All for being in the vicinity of a peaceful demonstration.
That's correct. All just for being present in the area where there was a peaceful demonstration happening.
So,
I would just like to say that earlier that same day, we had held a similar demonstration in another Philadelphia suburb called Collegeville. where it was another member of Repent America's house that we were demonstrating at. And we were there, the police showed up, we spoke with the police officers, and there was no problem. So we actually stayed there for half an hour, and the police officers stood there and talked to us the whole time. There was no problem, there were no tickets, there were no arrests, there was no nothing.
Oh, this is the other demonstration you were talking about.
Yeah, that happened earlier that same day.
Yeah, that was in the article.
Yeah, this is DJ Awaken. Did you recognize the police officers that was at that demonstration was also present at the other demonstration before that?
No, it was in two different jurisdictions. One was in Collegeville and one was in East Pikeland.
And was Jason present at that other demonstration as well?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, that's interesting. Was there other vehicles in the area of where he was messed with, so to speak, with the police as well?
In East Pikeland, where he was arrested, the only other vehicles around were residents or people passing through the neighborhood. When we were in Collegeville, there were several other vehicles. We actually had several cars with us, and when we went to the second demonstration, we all got into one car and went together.
Oh, so there was nobody else around in that area when that incident occurred?
There were, there were neighbors that came outside because of the demonstration and they heard us, but there was no other, there were no other cars parked in the area other than those of the residents.
So sorry to interrupt you, but in case listeners have tuned in, you're with Radioactive San Diego, and we're speaking here with Josh, who's an activist from Anti-Racist Action in Philadelphia, speaking about Jason Robbins, who's been given a multitude of charges, and clearly, in this case, it's about criminalising dissent. I mean, basically, the charges against Jason Robbins clearly constitute an attempt by the East Pikeland Township Police to stifle even the most peaceful forms of dissent against the hate speech and incitement to violence of organisations like Repent America.
I just want to say on behalf of ARA, we also feel that this is an attempt by the authorities in Pennsylvania to stop the practice of peaceful demonstrations outside people's homes. In other places, like in New Jersey, for example, there's actually a legal precedent won by members of the animal rights movement to have home demonstrations. And in New Jersey, there's a court case that was decided that that's legally protected free speech. In Pennsylvania, there's just an activist precedent. People have been doing it for years with no problems. And now all of a sudden, they decided they want to make arrests. And I feel like they're trying to criminalize this specific tactic, even though in other jurisdictions, it's completely legal.
Hmm.
I mean, like I said before, another member of our chapter who was at the demonstration just actually received charges in the mail yesterday, and his charges are a misdemeanor, and he's being charged with making terroristic threats, and he's also being charged with harassment. And those charges were not filed for 10 days after the event happened and after Jason had been arrested. They were just filed last week, and he just received them yesterday.
Do you feel that the community where Jason was apprehended is very much in favor of the Bush administration with their anti-gay point of views?
Based on my knowledge of that area and of that county, I understand that it is a very conservative place, and that in fact, someone actually just told me that they're has only been one Democrat elected to office in Chester County since 1979. That gives you an idea of the kind of politics people in that area have.
Bush has been very vocal lately about passing a constitutional rule against gay marriage. Do you feel that feel that this is connected in regards to his harassment?
I would say that based on my knowledge of Chester County, that I'm sure that most of the people that live there and the people that were immediately in the neighborhood of where we were having this demonstration would most probably support Bush's proposal. And I think that groups like Repent America and other right-wing Christian fundamentalist groups like them are taking cues from the current administration and from Bush himself, and that they feel that they can come out in public more often and come out more strongly because of the political climate that we're in. And I think it's the political climate was different, these groups wouldn't feel such a right to be so public and be so out there.
It's absolutely disgusting. It's horrific. So with Jason, he's got limited financial means, and he's dependent on community support to prove his innocence. Is that right?
That's correct. You know, he's going to need help paying for his lawyer and any legal costs. So right now we've been spending a lot of our time and energy in fundraising. And if it's okay, I'd like to put out a website that Jason has that we've been using for support.
Yep.
It's actually www.freejasonrobbins.com. So it's freejasonrobbins.com.
And there's also an email here, supportjason@gmail.com. Is that still applicable?
Yeah, that is.
And, yeah, so if people want to donate, please email the support committee and go onto the website as quickly as possible. It's an urgent situation.
I'd also like to say that, you know, Jason is definitely being optimistic. I know his charges are trumped up. He knows that. But at the same time, he also, you know, is feeling really bad about how much time he's facing on all of those things. So even if people can't give a financial contribution, if people could just go on to the website and send him a message of support, I know that's something that he would
absolutely
really appreciate.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, and unfortunately, he is definitely not alone.
That's right. We're actually talking on the show so far about quite a few activists that have been arrested, a lot of raids by the FBI, and unfortunately, it's because of the Patriot Act that are giving police a lot of ludicrous powers.
Mm-hmm.
You can also PayPal money directly to Jason, can't you?
Yeah.
Planting the pages at yahoo.com.
That's right.
So there are a number of ways you can support Jason, but if you haven't got cash, that's cool too. Just support him in any way you can. So, you're with Radioactive San Diego, Radioactive Radio San Diego, sorry. And you're with Eleanor of the Ways and DJ Awakened. And DJ Awakened, did you want to ask Josh any more questions before we finish?
No, that's all the questions. I think you made it very clearer what the situation is, not necessarily about him personally, and definitely he didn't do anything wrong. If anything, he can take this arrest as getting a compliment from the system that he has stood up and saying, no, this is not right what you're doing. We deserve to have equality.
Absolutely, we deserve to have equality. There's just one final question that I wanted to ask you, Josh, before we finish the interview. I understand that Jason was actually in prison for 100 hours. What was that all about? That was quite a couple of weeks ago now.
Yeah, to be completely honest with you, you know, I'm an activist. I've been an activist for quite some time.
Good for you.
I definitely had to get my friends out of jail before. I've never been in a jurisdiction like Chester County where every step we took, like everything we tried to do, everything that we've always done in the past in every other place, we just hit a brick wall. I mean, they told us that it's normal process in Chester County for it to take 3 to 5 days for someone to be fully processed into the county jail before they could get visitors, get commissary, get anything like that. And I've never experienced that before. Even in small jurisdictions, 48 hours, 72 hours is a much more normal time. And, you know, and in Chester County, for some reason, their process is just basically insane to me. The judge had set the bail at $10,000 street cash. There's only one bail bondsman that operates in the entire county. So once the bail bondsman turned us down, we weren't able to bail Jason out until his preliminary hearing. It was just a process it was a very hard process to get Jason out of jail these trumped up charges. And like I said, I've never experienced like those kind of obstacles when I've had comrades arrested in the past.
Yeah, just for our listeners as well as for me, Is there a court date for his next appearance?
It's my understanding that he has a court date on January 5th, but it's a really simple court date. It's just for him to enter his plea and have his attorney enter his appearance.
Do you have the address for that location or the name of the courthouse?
It's the Phoenixville District Court. I don't remember the exact address. It's on Bridge Street in Phoenixville. If people go onto Jason's support committee website, we'll be updating that with all the court information once we have final confirmation on it.
And we'll have you back anyway, Josh, to do a follow up on this. And for me, I just wanted to ask about. So he's on bail now, isn't he, Jason?
Mm-hmm.
And he's on bail, and then so can you just tell listeners again what is that court case for on the 5th of January?
Oh, it's the appearance is just for Jason to enter his plea, guilty or not guilty.
Uh-huh.
And of course Jason is pleading not guilty and plans to fight these charges all the way through a trial.
Has Jason legal help at this moment?
Yes, he does.
Lovely. So it's really about the activist community, or the community at large, rather, being able to donate to the Defence Fund now.
Yeah.
Thank you. Go on.
Oh, no, that's true.
Is that it? Did you want to add any more comments?
The only thing that I'd like to add, and this is basically to any activist out there that's listening to this, and for us as Philadelphia Anti-Racist Action, even though we're facing this campaign of intimidation, even though we're facing this harassment from the state, we're not going to stop organizing, and we're going to keep organizing, you know, both with this campaign against Repent America and in general all the campaigns that we work on normally. And I just want to encourage other activists, even with all the repression that everyone is facing right now, to not stop, to not back down. That's what they want, and we can't let them win.
Absolutely. So you're listening to Doing Time Behind the Bars of America at Radioactive Radio San Diego, and it's approximately 4:43, although over there in Philadelphia it'll be about quarter to eight now, yeah?
That's right.
Big time difference. Thanks so much, Josh, for coming onto the program, and we'll be following this case.
Okay, great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And you're back with Radioactive Radio San Diego with the show Doing Time Behind the Bars of America. And you're with DJ Eleanor of The Ways and DJ Awakened. And just before we move on to Richard Williams, I just wanted to, again, just quickly talk about Daniel McGowan again, who was arrested along with other environmental activists, but completely separate charges. And federal prosecutors are alleging that Daniel, indicted on 16 different counts, was involved in two separate fires in Oregon during 2001, claimed by the Earth Liberation Front, ELF, whatever that may be. Daniel totally denies any involvement with arson and denies membership in the ELF, yet he is facing the most severe sentence for this type of sabotage in United States history. The prosecution is pushing for mandatory minimum sentences of 30 years each on two major charges, which, if pressed to trial, threaten a life sentence. Additional arrests and raids happened across the US in Virginia, Arizona, and Oregon in related cases. More information is available, and I've already given you the email for that. Now, in 2 weeks' time on this show, listeners can look forward to having the sister of Daniel McGowan, Lisa McGowan, on the air. Very strong woman. She's actually very committed to her brother and is doing all she can to help with the legal costs. She'll actually be on air discussing not so much legal strategy, but really talking about the horrible situation that her brother is in. So I encourage activists once again to donate to legal costs, and to send an email to the email that was read out earlier on the show. So moving on now to Richard Williams. And Richard Williams was a long-time political prisoner, And I'll actually be reading out a statement that was actually done when he passed away. And here it is. It is most sad when comrades spend their dying days in the hands of the state instead of with their families and friends, where they belonged all along. Even more cause to keep up the struggle to free the other political prisoners. Richard Williams, in his own words, and this is actually a bio that was taken from the website. I am a single father and grandfather. I was born on November 4th, 1947, in Beverly, Massachusetts, which is a small coastal city 25 miles north of Boston. My mother was a factory worker and seamstress, and my father was a machine operator. I have one sister younger than me by 6 years. Just when the draft was getting heavy for Vietnam, I turned 18 years old and promptly received my notice. Like most working class kids, white or black, there was no easy way out of it. Either get drafted, join, or hide. I chose not to go. At 20 years old, I was arrested for having marijuana, which in Massachusetts was a felony. Given the choice of 6 months in jail or joining the army, I went to jail in 1967 and became ineligible for the draft. I continued to have brushes with the law when in 1971 I was arrested for robbery in New Hampshire and received a 7 to 15 year sentence. I was 23 and faced 5 solid years in jail at the least. I realised at that time that I was going nowhere fast, so I needed to change something. So I started with myself. I became involved with trying to better the prison conditions I was in, which were more deplorable. It was 1971, the year George Jackson was murdered, the year of the Attica Rebellion. There was unrest in most prisons because overall the prisons were brutal and inhumane. I was elected chairperson of the New England Prisoner Association. Inside, I met with legislators and participated in food and work strikes and protests for better conditions. I read a lot of history and worked in political study groups. I was locked up, beaten, and shipped out for my activities. I learned through study and my efforts that the struggle was much larger than my own surroundings. I became a communist. Upon my release, I worked briefly with the Prairie Fire Organising Committee. I went to work for the New England Free Press, a radical collective print shop, for almost 2 years. Along with Barbara, Yarn and Kazi, I was part of the Amalanda concert in Harvard Stadium in 1979. Featuring Bob Marley, Amalanda was a benefit concert to provide aid to liberation forces in southern Africa. My role was as part of a people's security force which provided security for the concert. We also did security work for the community, such as house-sitting with people who were under attack by racists. We went to Greensboro, North Carolina in 1979 to protest the killings of SWP, Socialist Workers' Party, members by the KKK. I went underground to join the armed Kallenstein movement in 1981 and was captured in Cleveland on November 4, 1984, my 37th birthday. I was convicted for 5 of the United Freedom Front UFF bombings in 1986 in Brooklyn Federal Court. In 1987, I got a hung jury at the Somerville NJ trial in the death of a state trooper during a shootout with Tom Manning. Next, I went through a 2-year-long trial in Springfield, Massachusetts, along with Pat and Ray in 1988 and 1989 for seditious conspiracy and RICO. The jury refused to convict us. In December 1991, I was convicted of killing state trooper Lamonco in 1981 after my second trial on these charges in Somerville, NJ. I am to serve 45 years for the UFF actions when I finish serving my NJ sentence of 35 years to life. As with all dedicated revolutionaries, the government has caught. They have tried to bury my body away in prison while being unable to crush my spirit. I was about to say I welcome correspondence, but obviously that's not pertinent anymore. Richard Williams passed away on the 7th of December 2005, and there will be ongoing memorials and events all over the country. And in fact, Matt Hart, who we're going to be interviewing next, will be talking about upcoming events that will be happening for Richard over in Los Angeles. And he says at the end, actually, which I missed, here we are, long live revolutionary resistance to imperialism and capitalism. Here's a statement also from Jan Lehmann, who's a political prisoner also that was from the United Freedom Front and that is actually in captivity over at Wall State Prison in Massachusetts. And I'll read out his address at the end of the statement in case people want to write to him. The death of political prisoner Richard Williams. It is with great sorrow and loss that I need to let people know of the death of my dear comrade, long-held political prisoner Richard Williams. Richard's liver failed and he passed on December the 7th, 2005, in a federal prison in North Carolina. Richard Williams, who turned 58 only last month, was a lifelong anti-imperialist and socialist, one of the Ohio Seven, who had been in captivity since 1984. Richard was a peace and justice activist, a revolutionary and a freedom fighter. He was the people's soldier, a friend and an ally of the poor and oppressed, of the working class around the world. As a young man, Richard was inspired by the life and words of Che Guevara, and in his own life he became a true example of proletarian internationalism. Everyone is invited to post their remembrances and condolences about Richard Williams on Four Struggle Mag's discussion board, www.fourstrugglemag.org. So the next issue, number 6, which will happen in February, will feature material on Richard and his life. And in fact, this statement was actually put out by Jan Lehmann, Ohio 7 anti-imperialist political prisoner, on December 11th, 2005. I just wanted to quickly read out for listeners Jan Lehmann's address, in case people wanted to write to Ohio 7 political prisoner. And it's Jan, J-A-A-N, Karl, K-A-R-L, Lehmann, L-A-A-M-A-N, W41514 is his prison number, P.O. Box 100, South Walpole, W-A-L-P-O-L-E-M-A, which stands for Massachusetts, USA, 02071. And he's an awesome guy. I actually went to visit him in Boston last May, and he's a really amazing guy, and he'll always answer your letters. So, write to him. He's really cool. And you're back with Radioactive San Diego, Radioactive Radio San Diego, rather. And you're here with DJ Eleanor of the Ways and DJ Awakened. And we now have Matt online, who will be talking about Anarchist Black Cross Federation. And this show is dedicated to Richard Williams. Hi, Matt.
Hello, how are you today?
Good, and you?
I'm doing well.
That's fantastic. Matt, did you just want to start off by telling listeners about the Anarchist Black Cross Federation and your background in activism?
Okay. Well, for starters, the Anarchist Black Cross Federation is an organization dedicated to supporting political prisoners, or what are labeled as political prisoners and prisoners of war in the United States. There's an estimated over 300 political prisoners who have been arrested because of their political actions or because of their political ideas, or targeted specifically because of their political actions, and who have been thrown in prison for charges or for crimes that they didn't commit. The organization has been around since the early 90s, approximately May of 1995, and since then we've been working diligently towards supporting political prisoners. I joined the organization in 1998 after working with various different grassroots organizations, such as the October 22nd Coalition and Food Not Bombs. I helped to create the local LA chapter, and I've been working in the organization ever since, helping to organize the LA chapter as well as doing work with the larger federation as a whole.
Fantastic. And can you just give listeners some definitions of what is a political prisoner?
Sure. Well, the most important, there are three specific definitions that we need to understand. The first definition is what is considered a social prisoner. Social prisoners are individuals who have committed basically social crimes, such as theft, distribution, et cetera, et cetera. And while there is a political aspect to those crimes, there might be a political nature, such as, for example, the drug wars, their crimes aren't inherently political. They're in actuality more for various different reasons, either survival, whatever. Then there are political prisoners. And the definition that we use for political prisoners came from the Special International Tribunal on the Violation of Human Rights of Political Prisoners in U.S. prisons and jails. The definition that we use is basically the following. It is a person incarcerated for actions carried out in support of legitimate struggles for self-determination or for opposing the illegal policies of governments and or political subdivisions. Long and short of it, it's an individual who was captured and imprisoned for struggling for social justice causes. Specifically, our main focus is specifically class war or the class struggle. Another definition is a prisoner of war, and prisoners of wars are those combatants who have been captured for struggling against colonial and alien domination or against racist regimes. For example, Puerto Rican political prisoners, for example, those people who have been captured for struggling for the independence of Puerto Rico, those people are labeled as prisoners of war. And we actually use the definition that has come forward from the Geneva Convention. And we feel it's important to take on these international definitions, because that way we can look at the rest of the world and say, look at underneath these international definitions that have been accepted, either through this tribunal that was created that helped define political prisoners, or by the Geneva Convention, which helped create prisoners of war, we can sit there and say these people are considered political prisoners by definitions that are accepted by the rest of the international community.
Thank you, Matt. So to be able to put this into practice then, and in terms of grassroots activism, mm-hmm. what movements would you actually be supporting?
Well, I mean, it's the main concept of it is really supporting organizations or movements that are fighting for social justice. Usually that involves progressive movements, but a great example is the Black Panthers. Black Panthers were very active in the late 60s, early 70s. Excuse me. And
I'll forgive you this time.
and they helped fight for social justice and basic human rights in a community which was riddled with police brutality, with basically living in a constant police state. These people, the Black Panthers, helped struggle for food programs in their communities, self-defense in their communities. And because of that, they became the targets of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. J. Edgar Hoover himself said the most revolutionary action that the Black Panthers ever did was the food program. It wasn't necessarily carrying the guns, which is usually the image that we have of the Black Panthers, but it was more of the act of getting the community to organize itself, to provide for itself, and for demanding dignity and respect within their communities, and challenging the racist society that we lived in during that time, and you know, even now today. But because of the fact that they did that, they became the target of the Federal Bureau of Investigation and other policing agencies. Many Black Panthers were assassinated. Many Black Panthers were in prison for crimes that they didn't commit. And a perfect example is Geronimo Jijaga Pratt, who after 27, 28 years in prison, it was discovered that he went to jail and was convicted for a crime that he didn't commit. The FBI, and one of the reasons why we found out was the FBI knew that he was actually up in Oakland, up in the Bay Area, when the crime that he was accused of and was imprisoned for took place, which was down here in Santa Monica. And he served, you know, almost 30 years in prison for a crime that he didn't commit, that the FBI knew that he didn't commit. But they did that as a way to neutralize him because he was considered one of the main leaders of the Black Panthers.
Lovely.
Yeah. So when we talk about political prisoners, it's individuals like Geronimo Jijaga Pratt. It's other individuals like Mumia Abdul-Jamal, who's one of the most famous political prisoners that we have in the United States, who in 1981 was accused of killing an officer, despite the fact that even recently an individual has come forward saying that he actually killed the officer. Mumia Abdul-Jamal is actually still in prison and, you know, is still in prison because of a crime that he is completely and absolutely innocent of. The judge won't release him, the state won't release him, because of the fact that he is a political threat. And if he is freed, it justifies our movement and justifies, you know, the political movement that was created specifically around Mumia Abdul-Jamal.
Hmm. Although there has been a bit of a victory on his case, hasn't there?
Yes, yes. Recently, it came forward that there has been some movement in his cases, and there might be a chance of a new trial coming up. So we're just holding our breath, and we're waiting to see what happens with that. And you know, it's very possible that we could see freedom in his future. We're all holding our breath on that.
And Anarchist Black Cross Federation, and you're with the LA chapter, just to clarify to listeners, is that correct?
Correct.
So I understand that in April, LA ABCF co-sponsored a speaking tour entitled From Panthers to Zapatismo.
Correct.
And that was along with Critical Resistance LA and Youth Justice Coalition. And I suppose I just brought that up because I wanted to kind of reiterate to listeners that LA ABCF do a lot of networking with communities of colour and indeed with the new Vanguard Black Panther movement.
Yeah,
is that correct?
That is correct. One of the positions of specifically the LA chapter, but it's something that the larger federation does as well, is when we talk about supporting political prisoners, there's more than just writing letters to them and trying to build a movement around them. It's also supporting the political prisoners and the communities that they come from. That means supporting their families. That means supporting the movements that they left behind. So when it comes to social justice, when it comes to fighting for dignity, for respect, addressing and fighting for issues of poverty, we feel that we need to stand in solidarity with those movements that still exist on the outside. Just because those people that we're supporting are actually on the inside, there's still that movement on the outside that we need to work with as part of our support for these people that are trapped on the inside.
Absolutely. And I mean, coming from a background of Australian activism, Matt, one of the things that I find really interesting is that although there are quite a lot of Aboriginal communities that do link up with white communities, and I've actually been involved with quite a few of those projects, it appears to me that often, a lot of the time, that Aboriginal people are very isolated from the white community. Would you say that that's true in the United States?
Well, I think most definitely. I think that even though there are communities that do try to create a bridge, and I think you kind of see that more amongst the left, there is without a doubt an isolation, and there is. I think that there is a tremendous issue of lack of respect for specific communities, specifically here in the indigenous communities, and whenever they have struggled for self-determination, whenever they have struggled for specific rights in their communities, there's been a huge, huge backlash that has taken place. And, I mean, we can look back in the 60s and 70s. I mean, we don't necessarily need to. We can look even present day, but just looking at the 60s and 70s, when people were asking for dignity and just basic respect with the marches, with the peace marches, with the civil rights marches, you saw the reaction. Here you've got, you know, even within the United States with the indigenous movements, you've seen the standoffs, which ultimately caused the imprisonment of a member, Leonard Peltier. And it's not just in the United States, it's also in Canada. There have been standoffs that have taken place, you know, in that area as well, where people have fought for their culture, they fought for their rights, and have faced serious repercussions because of that.
And in case listeners have just tuned in, you're with Radioactive Radio San Diego, listening to the show Doing Time Behind the Bars of America, and you're with DJ Eleanor of The Ways and DJ Awakened. We're at the moment interviewing Matt from Anarchist Black Cross Federation, Los Angeles, and indeed I think this could be quite a dangerous thing maybe in the future, according to the Patriot Act, for me to even mention this on there. Which could you comment on that, Matt?
You mean in regards to specifically the Anarchist Black Cross?
Mm.
Okay. Well, recently, within the last year, but the history of the Anarchist Black Cross, specifically the Anarchist Black Cross Federation, has not been without friction, shall we say. In the early creation of this federation, we experienced in our New Jersey organization when we actually created, we actually had a an office, a bookstore. Well, as soon as the Jersey Fact organization created the bookstore, it was actually shot up by the New Jersey police. Back in 1998, our organization was raided by a 22-man SWAT team. So we've always been under, basically the target or an organization of interest, shall you say, by various different policing agencies. They've been aware of us and understand what we do is nothing more than writing letters to political prisoners, trying to build support for political prisoners. It's nothing really more aggressive than that. But the reality is that we try to show awareness. We try to show and you know, put in limelight some of these discrepancies that exist in some of these cases. The fact that some of these people have been in prison for crimes that they didn't commit, and because of that, we have faced oppression. Earlier this year, in February, the federal government, specifically the Federal Bureau of Investigation, spoke and had specifically mentioned the Anarchist Black Cross Federation and had mentioned in its report about terrorism and made reference to the Anarchist Black Cross as an organization of concern. It didn't say that we were a terrorist organization, but it said basically that they're looking at us, they're watching us, we're an organization of concern because of our relationship with the political prisoners and our relationship with the movements that they've come from. So it's rather interesting, and since then, some of our members have been picked up by the Federal Bureau of Investigation and interrogated. Recently, some of the political prisoners have faced repercussion, specifically Odry Latalo, because of their relationship with us, where he's actually been put in a maximum security unit in Trenton, in the prison that he's located in, because of his relationship with us, because we build support around him, and because of the fact that we try to raise money for him, he has now been placed in a maximum control unit, also known as security housing unit. It's a higher level, higher security level within the prison system. So, unfortunately, as we're trying to build support, one of the flip sides to that is that it has also become detrimental not only to us as far as the work that we're doing, but sometimes, unfortunately, towards the prisoners that we do work with.
That's interesting that you say that, Matt. So although it hasn't been labeled as a terrorist organization, it may very well be.
Well, they have not yet at this point labeled it a terrorist organization, but the irony, the humor of it is that now you can pretty much label any organization a terrorist organization, even if it does something as simple as write letters to prisoners.
That's right.
And that's the interesting or the humor of it, if you will, a very thick and dark black humor, if you will, is that an organization as simple as that can be considered a terrorist organization. And even Food Not Bombs, an organization that is dedicated towards feeding the homeless, has basically been put underneath the same banner as the APCF, as this organization. And it does nothing more than feed the homeless and raise the issue of homelessness and raises and compares it, or at least the drastic difference between poverty and wealth within the society. So it just seems that it's a joke. It's very interesting to see what is considered a terrorist organization. You know, that these organizations who do not engage in violence, who do not, engage in acts of violence whatsoever, are not considered terrorist organizations. But then, meanwhile, you have the ultra-right-wing pro-life movement, which has not been considered a terrorist organization. Meanwhile, they're bombing abortion clinics. Meanwhile, they're attacking doctors and assassinating doctors. They've created more acts of violence than these two specific organizations that I just mentioned. But yet, you don't see the Right to Life organization.
Or Repent America.
What's that?
Repent America. They're a Christian organization that that actually do a lot of harm to gay and queer groups.
Yes. There's another example, or what's going on right now in the borders. You know,
that's
with
right.
With these Minutemen, they're not considered a terrorist organization, but yet they have engaged in acts of violence far greater than anything that the ABCF or Food Not Bombs have.
Interestingly, Matt, as you've been talking, and listeners do need to hear this, I think what comes to mind is a morning, a winter morning, in Australia, and I was actually about to have a bath, and I had on my bathrobe, and I had a sponge covered with eucalyptus oil. I was about to scrub the bath, and there was this knock on my door, and I came to the door, and I said, "Who is it?" "Oh, federal police." And I said, "What are you here for?" "Oh, we're here to talk about the structure and activities of the Anarchist Black Cross." You know, it's very interesting, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And you know, I don't want to sit there and make it seem like, you know, we're an organization just gets together just to write letters. No, we definitely have a political identity.
Document some of the activities, actually.
What's that?
Of what you actually do.
Okay. Well, I mean, the very root of this organization is really building a relationship with the prisoners. That, to us, is by far the most important thing. But we also have a very specific political identity. We are anarchists. We believe, you know, we believe in a specific viewpoint about society and how society should be created. We are at heart anti-capitalists. But the main work that we do is support political prisoners or people who have struggled for social justice, for people who have struggled against colonialism, against the capitalist structure, and have been in prison for it. And that's really the main work of the organization. So that means building a relationship with the prisoners, either through visiting them, writing letters, building support within various different communities about these prisoners and discussing their cases. We also have specific events where we'll have video showings and we'll discuss these individual cases. The contradictions that exist in the cases of where people were actually thrown in jail for crimes they didn't commit versus those individuals who did actually commit the acts and did go to prison for crimes that they did actually commit, or for struggling against specific institutions. Earlier you had mentioned specifically Richard Williams.
Yes.
Richard Williams, who I'd actually like to talk about.
Please.
Richard Williams was an individual who in 1984 was captured after being involved in an organization called the United Freedom Front. And when you think of Richard, to me, you can't help but talk about Richard without talking about individuals such as Nelson Mandela, because what Richard was fighting for was he was struggling against the apartheid. He was focusing on the institutions and attacking institutions in the United States that supported the apartheid dream, apartheid system in South Africa. Okay. Now, when we look at Nelson Mandela, we view Nelson Mandela as a hero. We view him as somebody who went to prison for many years for struggling for justice, for struggling for what is right, for struggling against this racist apartheid regime. And we've got a right to view him as that. He is a great man. And at the same rate, here in the United States, up until recently, we had three individuals, a total there were seven of them, who went to prison for struggling in the United States against that very same regime that we call Nelson Mandela a hero for struggling against. Here we have one individual, Nelson Mandela, that we consider a hero, but yet we consider people like Richard Williams somebody who needs to go to jail. There's a contradiction there. They were fighting for the same exact thing, struggling against the same exact regime, against the same exact institution, and they were targeting in the same exact manner the same structures and institutions that were helping to support the apartheid regime. Richard Williams came to the United or struggled against those institutions here in the United States that were supporting the apartheid regime in South Africa. He focused on institutions that were either providing weapons, monetary funds, technology, et cetera, which were helping to maintain the apartheid system. And what he was doing was doing the very same thing that Nelson Mandela advocated and supported and helped create, which was an underground organization which focused and targeted those institutions which helped create the apartheid regime. Meanwhile, we consider Nelson Mandela a hero, but yet we consider Richard Williams and individuals that were arrested with Richard Williams as someone who should go to prison. To me, there's a contradiction.
Absolutely. And this show tonight, Matt, has been dedicated to Richard Williams. And
yes,
we spent some time actually before your interview reading out a statement by Jan Lehman. And in fact, I did actually read out his address to listeners in case they wanted to write to him.
Good.
And so I read basically a series of articles about him. So it's really fantastic that you've actually been able to talk about the background for him. Is there actually an event coming up about Richard in Los Angeles.
Yes, we're actually trying to organize an event, and you can help me. I don't remember the date. Was it the 21st?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. We're trying to organize an event on the 21st of January, and I'm not sure if you actually have the address available. If not, we'll
at this. Just keep talking.
Okay. Where we're going to have various different speakers, some individuals who have worked side by side with Richard, who knew Richard personally. I was one of the lucky individuals that had the pleasure of getting to know Richard through correspondence. I was writing for him for 8 years. He was an amazing individual. But we're going to have other individuals like Diane Fugino speak about her experiences with Richard. We're also in the process of also trying to get people to speak about Central and South America and some of the struggles that were going on during that time, because Richard not only struggled against institutions that were supporting the apartheid, but he was also struggling against institutions and individuals who were helping to support paramilitary organizations in Central and South America, which were attacking the general population and were committing acts of terrorism in those areas. So we want to have people come and speak about the struggles that were going on in Central and South America, as well as the struggle that was going on against the apartheid, so that that way people can understand what Richard was involved in, why he was struggling the way he was, what he was exactly struggling against, in order to really get to know Richard as an individual and get to know what an important individual he was in our society.
Fantastic. And perhaps we can cover that event for Radioactive San Diego. Now, I understand that the event is actually going to be held at the Southern California Library.
Correct. I just don't have the address available.
In all honesty, I don't actually have the specific address, but we will be coming back on air and disclosing that address at a later date. So it is on the 21st of January, and we've yet to actually organise a time, haven't we?
Correct.
Okay, so that's just... All right, well, we're nearing the end of the interview, Matt, but just one final question, just in relation to any suggestions for listeners, actually two final questions, any suggestions for political prisoners that they can write to?
Well, of course, you had mentioned Jan Lemann, who I think is one of the... one of the most amazing individuals that I've gotten to know, somebody who has an abundance amount of love and dedication to the people that he struggled for, as well as the movement in general. He's an individual that has always been very inspiring to me. I'd also encourage people to write to Marilyn Buck, who's up north about an hour away from San Francisco, up in Dublin, or is it Dublin? Yes.
I'm sorry? Yeah, Dublin.
Yes.
That's right.
Thank you. And she's another individual who is just an absolutely amazing individual who, you know, helped to support and struggle and helped to support the black liberation struggle. She's just an amazing individual, and I would definitely encourage people to write to her. There's also Bill Dunn, who's up in USP Atwater, who, you know, was involved in the 60s. And is another just absolutely individual, amazing individual that I would encourage people to write to as well.
And is there a website that people can look up so that they can find out about the situation, or is there a contact email?
Yes, you can actually contact LAABC at la@abcf.net. That is la@abcf.net. You can also check us. We're in the process of reworking our website, but I encourage people to check out www.abcf.net, where we have the bios of the political prisoners that we do support work with, as well as what are the best ways to write to these political prisoners, hints and guides to writing to these political prisoners and prisoners of war.
Fantastic. Well, Matt, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
And we will certainly be having you back at a later date to discuss this further.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you're back with Doing Time Behind the Bars of America, and we've just about ended our show. But before we do, I just wanted to give out a prison address for Daniel McGowan. He's the US Marshals have actually captured him, and he's in Dublin at the moment, but they're bound to move him. There will be a hearing set. There's no date set for the hearing as yet to try and and work out bail. He was refused bail. But what I wanted to say was that there'll be more information in the next 2 weeks when the show comes back on. I'll be speaking with Daniel's sister, Lisa, who's actually very committed to assisting her brother. I'll also be bringing you information about other activists that have been arrested across America next show. But I'll give you Daniel's address in case people want to send him a letter of support. The letters of support are urgent. Daniel McGowan, McGowan. His prison number is 63794053, Dublin, Dublin, Dublin Federal Detention Centre, 5675 8th Street, Camp Parks, CAMP Parks, Dublin, California, and the zip code is 94568. So, we're nearing the end of our show. I'd like to thank the interviewers for coming on the air. Thank you to Matt from Anarchist Black Cross Los Angeles. Thank you also to Josh from Anti-Racist Action in Philadelphia, who talked about, who discussed Jason Robbins' case. He's been arrested and given a multitude of charges. Thanking other people also for assisting with the information and technicalities of the radio show. Thanks to DJ Awakened. Also thanks to Lisa, the sister of Daniel, who gave me great inspiration to do the show. And thanks, of course, to Radioactive San Diego. So from DJ Eleanor of the Ways, it's goodbye. And
thank you, DJ Eleanor of the Ways.
And thank you, Awakened. So we've thanked each other. Take good care. Stay safe and stay strong in the struggle. Bye.